From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made yesterday afternoon when Senator Bernie Sanders met at the White House with President Obama and Vice President Biden. They talked about party unity, and after that meeting, Sanders came out and publicly thanked President Obama for showing impartiality during the campaign. Sanders said, quote, "They said in the beginning that they would not put their thumb on the scales, and they kept their word, and I appreciate that very, very much." End quote. Then President Obama released a video officially endorsing Hillary Clinton for president. He said it's time to bring the party together and to focus on winning in November. Senator Sanders has not left the race, by the way. But last night, Senator Elizabeth Warren also endorsed Hillary Clinton. The Clinton campaign hopes that this is the dam breaking. This is the turn toward unity that they have been seeking for months. Is it? Well, this hour, our panel discusses the path ahead as we get toward the end of the primaries, at least. And let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Josh Keaton is a local Democratic activist and a Clinton supporter. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Sweeney is with Monroe County for Bernie Sanders. Kevin, nice to see you back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And Carrie Gilroy is here. She's an elected delegate pledged for Bernie Sanders, also a city school teacher. Carrie, welcome to you as well.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
Let me start with just what we saw from some of the folks yesterday after that meeting. Let's listen to a little bit of what President Obama said in his official endorsement video for Hillary Clinton.
Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders may have been rivals during this primary, but they're both patriots who love this country, and they share a vision for the America that we all believe in. An America that's hopeful, an America that's big-hearted, an America that is strong and fair and gives every child the same chance that we had. Those are the values that unite us as Democrats. And if we all come together in common effort, I'm convinced we won't just win in November. We'll build on the progress that we've made, and we will win a brighter future for this country that we love.
All right, so that's President Obama's official endorsement. Let me ask Kerry Gilroy and Kevin Sweeney. He's saying, you know, these were rivals, but just like Clinton and Obama in 2008, in 2016, you can have a hard-fought primary and unify and get on the same page here. Kerry, is it time for that? What do you think?
I do feel that perhaps Obama's endorsement was a little premature. We still have a convention to get to. We still have a lot of issues on the table that we need to discuss and make sure that we advance a lot of Bernie's ideas and advance his platform at the convention. I think there's a lot of conversation that still needs to take place among the differing factions of the Democratic Party. And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done still. And it kind of feels a little bit like they're trying to push Bernie out a little bit by this endorsement.
Kevin Sweeney, what do you think?
I do agree with Kerry. I do think it is premature until after the convention, but I see it as a reaction to a potential Trump presidency, so basing it on the fears of, oh, we cannot have Trump in the White House, so let's all unify the Democrats. You can't unify until we all share the same common goals and beliefs, and that has yet to be done.
Josh Keaton, premature for the president to step in like this?
I don't think so. I think that the majority of the elected delegates are now on Clinton's side. We only have 20 elected delegates left to go out of over 4,000, so we can kind of see where this is going from here. And I think that it's important that, you know, everyone on the left kind of realize that Hillary Clinton is the candidate that's going to be representing the Democrats going forward. But certainly Kevin and Kerry are right in a certain extent that there are issues that still have to be sorted out. I think that the president, when he met with Bernie Sanders, made that point. That was the basis of that meeting, was to make sure that there's common ground upon which that discussion can take place. And I think we're going to see a vibrant discussion. Kerry, when you're down there in Philadelphia next month, I'm sure we'll see a vibrant discussion between the Sanders delegates and the Clinton delegates as to how we move forward on those issues.
There was another endorsement last night, and we'll listen to that in just a second here, but I can recall going back to earlier parts of this campaign, talking to Kevin, talking to other delegates for Bernie Sanders. There's a lot of admiration for Senator Elizabeth Warren. Many Democrats were hoping she would run for president. Of course, she did not. And then both Clinton supporters and Sanders supporters were hoping for an endorsement throughout this campaign from Warren, some indication that maybe she would support Bernie Sanders, or maybe she'll endorse Hillary Clinton, maybe she'll run with Clinton. Well, last night she finally was on Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC, and let's listen to their exchange.
I understand that you intend to endorse Hillary Clinton tonight. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I'm ready. I am ready to get in this fight and work my heart out for Hillary Clinton to become the next president of the United States and to make sure that Donald Trump never gets any place close to the White House.
All right, so that's Senator Warren. And Josh Keaton, I tend to think that endorsements are overblown in terms of their impact. The media fixates on them. I don't know that the voters do. Is this one different for any reason? Is Senator Warren, does she carry more weight here?
Well, I think that she acts as a bridge between the sort of establishment Democrats that I think that a lot of people are certainly on the Sanders side are fairly suspicious of, and some of the activists on the left that have been very supportive of Bernie Sanders. Elizabeth Warren, all going back to 2004, 2006, 2008 with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau when that was founded. You know, she has really been a part of that vanguard that's kind of led that consumer-driven, we have to challenge the influence of big business, challenge the influence of large corporations in our government. And she's been a very legitimate force in that fight. Her withholding her endorsement until everything was decided, I think, was very calculated on her part because she wanted either Senator Sanders or Secretary Clinton to earn those delegates in their own right. And I think that she, along with President Obama coming out and endorsing Hillary Clinton, is a sign that we're ready to take on Donald Trump as a unified party.
Carrie Gilroy, Senator Sanders, does her endorsement carry any weight with you? Do you think it matters?
Well, I think, you know, Josh talks about that she's this bridge between the establishment and perhaps the Bernie movement that we're starting to talk about. And if that's the case, I think she's kind of crossed that bridge, and she's over on the establishment side now, in my mind. I think that
Elizabeth Warren doesn't have cred now?
Well, I think in some people's minds, that's absolutely the case.
Okay.
Because not only did she withhold an endorsement, which is true, but there was a lot of radio silence from her during the entire campaign. We were really looking for something from her during this entire, you know, this past year. We didn't get much. We didn't hear from her. We heard a lot of, you know, this kind of Twitter war that she's engaged with now with Donald Trump, which is very sensationalistic. It's very, attention grabbing. It's very kind of popular to get in these Twitter wars with people.
She is hitting Trump on some specific points, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with the idea that it's sensationalistic or sort of loud, but she's been trying to hit him on specific points.
But here's what I'm hearing in her endorsement. I hear her talk about backing Hillary because we need to defeat Trump.
Yeah.
So this becomes the entire crux of the campaign that Hillary's running at this point. I'm not hearing Warren endorse Hillary because of certain platform points or because she's going to take on Wall Street or because she's going to take on campaign finance or because of any other issue. It's because right now we're looking at a race that is that's main selling point is I'm not Donald Trump.
Okay. Kevin Sweeney?
Yeah, I agree. I think that she said it right in the sentence that, I'm supporting Hillary against Trump. And I think that's it. We're showing endorsements to go against someone as opposed to in a belief or a platform. That's what I definitely heard in watching that interview with Senator Warren last night. A lot of it is really going to be decided at the convention. I mean, we're talking about millions of Sanders supporters, people he energized to come out, participate, who now feel they are only Bernie's their only chance. And that many of them are talking about looking towards the Green Party platform, which is very similar to the Sanders platform.
All right. It's like you're reading the script from the host, Kevin. Give me a second
before we get there.
Because we're going to be talking about that in a second. But before we get there, are you being unfair to Hillary Clinton supporters who might, and maybe I'm going to give Josh a chance to answer this in a second. But Kevin, you know, I understand there are absolutely going to be voters who vote in a way that seeks to prevent someone from being elected. Right. That happens in every election. Are you minimizing the Clinton supporters who say, no, I support her because I appreciate her and her record? You're kind of claiming that doesn't really exist.
Well, I think it does exist in many people's minds. But I really do believe the reality of it is when you look back at the voting record of Secretary Clinton when she was in the Senate, her stance on military intervention when she was Secretary of State, her stand on fracking when she was Secretary of State. We're ignoring all those issues and we're looking past those and saying, oh, it's okay, you made a mistake then. Her vote on the war in Iraq. I don't think it is being unfair to them. I think that Bernie Sanders' platform was pretty much his own. And slowly but surely, we started seeing many of Hillary's speeches starting discussing income inequality, affordability of college, the same things that Bernie started right from day one. The question is for many people like myself is, okay, you said the words, but are you really going to back them up with action? And based on your previous voting records, I'm still not convinced she is.
Okay. Josh, are we minimizing Clinton supporters? And do you know a lot of people who are voting for Clinton not just to vote against Trump?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people, particularly here in New York State, who remember her legacy when she was our senator, where she was, you know, working on growing jobs here in upstate, when she was focused on dealing with the aftermath of 9/11 and a whole range of issues that were very important to New Yorkers and the rest of the country at large. But, you know, again, I think there's a lot of valid points that, you know, Sanders supporters are making at large, which is that, you know, we can sort of wrap our minds around the idea that Clinton is the nominee, but there are lots of issues that remain to be resolved, and it's incumbent upon Secretary Clinton to really, you know, come out forcefully in favor of changing campaign finance law, for example. That's a really important one for me in particular. You know, of course, I'm an enthusiastic Clinton supporter, but it's something that I would like to see her speak more about. And I think it's something that's going to energize the country. I think that whether you're a Sanders supporter, a Clinton supporter, or you're someone who looks at Donald Trump as someone who can shake things up, I think all of that is essentially rooted in the idea that wealthy corporations and wealthy business owners and folks who have a lot of money have an inordinate influence on our government. And I think that it's going to be important for the Democratic left at large to come out strongly in favor of limiting that influence. And I think that as we move towards the convention, as Sanders, you know, comes on board and his supporters are energized in the Clinton effort, it's important that she also, you know, takes their issues on. I think, Kevin, you made a great point that, you know, as the race became closer, she became talking more like Bernie Sanders. That's a win in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, she's been responding to what she sees out there. And, you know, it really reminds me, I'm going to go on for a little bit here, but it reminds me of a story that I think we're all somewhat familiar with. When FDR was running for re-election back in 1936, and, you know, he's giving all these speeches about battling against big business and trying to create jobs and all these things. And a woman asked, you know, can you really do all of these things? And he says, only if you make me. And I think that what Sanders supporters have to realize is that they may have lost this battle, but there's a greater war that can be won, where if they continue their influence and if they continue moving on those issues, Secretary Clinton will respond to them. The Democratic Party will respond to them. We're already seeing that, you know, Bernie Sanders being the ranking member on the Budget Committee, if he is successful and if the Democrats are successful in taking back the Senate, that's a very, very powerful seat in the Senate, where he's going to be chair of the Budget Committee when Hillary Clinton is elected. So there's a lot to be gained by unity, but I totally agree with those who say that there are issues yet to be resolved, and I think we're all going to work to make sure they are resolved.
All right, so a couple things here before we let our panelists get back into it, because I know the phones are starting to ring. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. And this hour is aimed at the political left, but anybody can join the conversation. But we'd love to hear from Clinton and Sanders supporters. Sanders supporters in particular, you know, is this a premature forced exit? Is this a natural point for the president to step in, for Elizabeth Warren to step in, for this party unity to start happening? Or maybe this year's different. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And here's an example of kind of the dichotomy. On Twitter, Robert says, Robert says, I lost hope in Senator Warren when she endorsed Hillary Clinton. We thought she would endorse Bernie Sanders. She is not a bridge. Anyone can get behind Hillary against Donald Trump. That's operating out of fear. But Dave writes to us and says, kind of quoting an article, he links to an article, he says, grow up. Secretary Clinton is not the enemy. Donald Trump and his legion of racist minions are the enemy. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of the dichotomy already. And when I mentioned the phone number, four phone lines lit up all at once. We will get to your phone calls. When I say I want to know if this year is different, here's what I mean. 8 years ago, I can recall Hillary Clinton supporters saying, no way.
Puma.
I will not vote for Barack Obama. This has been long and hard fought. This is painful. Not going to happen. Just about everybody did. But Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are both Democrats, and they're very similar in many ways. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders is maybe closer to a Jill Stein, or is, you know, this is the, I think it's a fair question to ask if they are different enough in ideology and political goals that Is this the year that one of the main candidates who does not win a nomination, supporters say, I'm not going to be there in November, and maybe some of them aren't? I don't know. Carrie, what do you think?
Well, I think it's hard to compare this particular season with any previous one. I mean, what we see in Senator Sanders is not just a popular candidate, but we see a movement. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions of people who, you know, are engaged, who are energized, who maybe never participated in the political process before, never donated to a campaign. They're donating every month, you know, this kind of thing. This is a true movement. And to, you know, discount that and compare it to 08, you know, in 08 when the Hillary supporters, you know, Obama had a very exciting campaign. So it might have been a little bit easier, I think, at that time for Hillary supporters to jump on board with Obama eventually. Even ones who said that they wouldn't initially. With such an exciting possibility in Obama that we had in 08, it was an easier and more natural transition. I think what we're seeing now with the Bernie movement is that we're not just going to slip back into the status quo. The reason that Bernie has built this movement is because we don't believe that the status quo is working for middle-class Americans anymore. And to kind of abandon that would be selling our souls in many ways.
Okay. Kevin Sweeney.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even if you do want to shoot back 8 years ago, you didn't see that unity come right out of the gate when the endorsements came out.
It took time.
And it took time for President Obama to really formulate his message to bring in some of the Clinton camp. And I think that is the key issue. We're not talking, people talk about, I'm all in for Hillary. And when you talk to a Sanders supporter, it's not so much about the candidate as it is for the platform. And I think that's where the support is. And I think we're going to see the impact of the education that Senator Sanders has done in this past year impact the down races, the races for Congress, the races for Senate. More people are going to be approached about the influence of money in politics. So I think his influence is going to live on. And one thing that I think President Obama failed to do, he didn't energize his movement once he was in the White House. And I think had he done that, he would have been far more successful.
You don't think there were forces that might have impacted his efforts to do that?
Oh, I think there were forces, but he didn't do a public appeal to get those masses who were coming out for him in the past to get on the phone, call their congressmen, call their senators, and to have an impact. Sanders has a camp, has a following now. He has a following in the support for his platform. So I think in the long term, as Carrie said, we're not going away. I know our offices on Culver Road have no intention of going away. We're going to continue to push the progressive movement and hold all of our elected officials accountable to that.
All right. So Josh Keaton, what we're hearing here is, and this is at the tail end of what has been a terrible week for Donald Trump. Self-inflicted wounds that if you're like me and you now think that there's almost nothing he can do. Remember when Donald Trump said I could walk onto Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and still not lose votes?
Yeah.
And we thought that was crazy and it turned out he was probably right. You know, he's come close to really actually doing self-inflicted damage this week. It's at the tail end of a really damaging week for Trump. And maybe there is an expectation on the left that Trump can't win. I still don't think that that's true at all. And I think it's very early in the process. I mean, I think we're still a long way to November. But do you see any difference between this year and previous years in terms of bringing that party together for the reasons that Carrie and Kevin just laid out?
Well, I think Carrie made a really good point earlier, which was that, you know, in 2008, you saw a pretty positive move towards Senator Obama because there was history on his side. There were folks that wanted to see the first African-American president. A lot of Clinton supporters were, you know, spurned that she lost. But eventually, you know, by September, they kind of realized that, you know, the country's going down the tubes and here's a great candidate that could do something for us. You know, and I would tend to agree that certainly that same type of momentum is probably not in Hillary's corner, right? She doesn't have that wind, those sorts of wind in her sails. But I think the specter of Donald Trump is a similarly motivating force for different reasons, right? Like, say what you want about Senator McCain. He's a normal Republican who's, you know, no more or less scary to us than any other Republican. But Donald Trump is a horse of a different color. I mean, he's totally outside the mainstream. He, you know, we could have an entire week of shows about how interesting and disturbing he is, quite frankly. So I think that's going to be the type of thing that really kind of motivates people. But, you know, again, returning to how we began the conversation, being opposed to someone is not the ideal campaign. You don't really want to have a campaign that's all about opposing the other side. You want to have a campaign about ideas, about issues. And I think, quite frankly, that we're going to get to a point where Donald Trump has shown his cards enough where he's turned off so many people that although he could make claims like that in the GOP primary, that's not going to work in the general election. So there's going to be an abundant amount of space for Hillary Clinton and for Democrats running for the Senate to really start engaging on issues. And that's where I hope this campaign eventually goes to. So I think that we can really have an anti-Trump sort of onus on us to bring us all together. But I think that coming out of the convention, I think it's going to be important that Democrats take advantage of this opportunity and really embrace the message that Senator Sanders brought to the fore, along with the stakeholders that Secretary Clinton is very good with bringing to the table, and really creating a legacy Democratic movement that can move for many years to come.
In other words, Josh, I recall the Cleveland tourism promotional video, the faux Cleveland promotional video with the tagline, "At least we're not Detroit." You know, the Clinton campaign can't be just "At least we're not Detroit." Right. You want to come to Cleveland, which happens to be where the RNC is this year. You want to come to Cleveland for its assets, not just because it's not Detroit. Josh wants people to vote for Clinton, not just because Clinton is not Donald Trump. And your point is, if you work with the Sanders people, if the platform includes that movement, you can get there.
Yeah, and I think that we're already seeing the foundings of that happening. I think you see that Senator Sanders is, in his recent statements the last couple of days, kind of alluding to the fact that he's not going to necessarily win the designation, but he is going to have a big influence on the issues that are important in that convention. And I know Kerry has more thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, I think that this is a really important moment for the Democratic Party. Robert Reich put out an article yesterday, and he stated that one-third of Sanders supporters approximately will not vote for Hillary. One-third of Sanders supporters will. And then there's a third that are undecided, and they're kind of waiting for the Democratic Party to say, look, we hear what you're saying. We want you in this party. We appreciate the effort and the passion and the enthusiasm that you're bringing to this party. We have a chance here to really rebuild the Democratic Party and maybe restore it to its roots and as the party of the people. And that's a huge opportunity that the Democrats have, and I really hope they don't miss that opportunity.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I have to agree with Kerry on that. I think that that is really important. When you look at the campaigns of both Senator Sanders and Donald Trump, they were running against the status quo. That energized a lot of Americans. And to go into the convention thinking we can keep the status quo and take the White House back, I think that would be a critical error. But, you know, and to mention Reich, you know, he actually yesterday stated he thought it was premature for these endorsements. It's all about the money and the influence and the politics. You know, I was very disappointed, for instance, to learn that in the platform committee, organized labor does not have any representation in the Democratic Party's platform. To me, that is not the party that I grew up with. That's the party we became in the 90s. And that's my fear of Hillary Clinton, is we're going to continue to be a party of moderates as opposed to a party of liberals.
All right, let me get our only break of the hour and come back to the phone. So if you're on the phone, we're coming to you next with Josh Keaton, a local Democratic activist supporting Hillary Clinton. Kevin Sweeney and Kerry Gilroy are here. Kevin's with Monroe County for Bernie Sanders. Kerry is an elected delegate pledged for Bernie Sanders and a city school teacher. And we're talking about what the party and what this movement for Bernie Sanders, where it goes next. Not to say that it's over. You didn't hear me declare that the race is over. Bernie Sanders has not dropped out of the campaign, but you are seeing more endorsements and certainly more of the Clinton campaign hoping that the dam is breaking. So let's get a short break. Your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the YWCA's person-to-person program aims to bridge racial divides. It takes two people from different racial and ethnic backgrounds and has them get together periodically for 9 months to talk about their lives and their perspectives and their challenges. The goal, to share different experiences and to break down stereotypes. We'll talk about how it works next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tom in Greece is first up. Go ahead, Tom.
Hello. Thank you. I was wondering what the percentages of the votes in the California primary, the percentage of votes that Hillary Clinton got and the percentage of votes that Bernie Sanders got in the California primary. And because I was wondering about her vote-getting ability, and also what for how long has the Democratic Party been using the superdelegates? I'll take my answer off the...
Tom, thanks for the phone call. On the percentage side, anybody know offhand what the California percentage is?
It was a 13-point spread, I thought.
It hasn't been finalized yet, though. They haven't counted the mail-in ballots, and there's over 2 million of those.
And they're going to count the provisional ballots, from what I understand.
Yeah, so it's probably going to be anywhere between 8 and 10, somewhere
around
there.
It will be closer.
Well, maybe, perhaps, but it was a pretty sound win.
Okay.
A third of the votes haven't been counted yet.
Okay, all right.
Sure.
But on the question of superdelegates, Josh Keaton, I think we can at least say this. The Democratic Party is not helping itself with the notion of superdelegates. If this is an egalitarian party, why are you elevating the status of delegates that possibly could subvert the overall will of the voters? You're already shaking your head. At some point, the party is going to get rid of them, right?
I suspect that's the case. You know, at the end of the day, the superdelegates will not influence this race. They didn't influence the race in 2008.
But if that's true, mm-hmm. then what are we doing with them?
So I think that's a very good reason why I suspect they'll be going away. I think that this is the year where they are probably either substantially diminished or gotten rid of altogether. But, you know, I think it is worth pointing out that, you know, Secretary Clinton has won the race, or at least is on course to win the race, not because of the superdelegates, but because she has won the majority of
She has several million
delegates.
More votes.
4 million more votes.
4 million more votes
she's got
and a lot more pledged
delegates. Yeah, over 400 more delegates. She's got, I think, 180 above the majority limit. So, yeah, I mean, I think there was this whole narrative of, well, it's a rigged election because superdelegates can do whatever they want. At the end of the day, it was because she was so successful with the elected delegates that she won. But, I mean, from just a narrative perspective and a why are we doing this perspective, I think it is important.
It's a bad look. And what offended the Sanders campaign and the movement was before she had captured a majority of elected delegates. Mm-hmm. The AP calls it based on superdelegates. And by the way, the AP is not in a conspiracy here. That's what they've always done, you know, for the last several campaigns. That's the way they count it. I just don't know why you're doing it that way.
I thought it was a bad look.
Yeah.
So I agree. Particularly because I thought that she was going to have a very good night anyway. And I kind of thought that it kind of depressed her turnout because she was already going to win on Tuesday. And I didn't really get why they did it. But
okay. Well, Carrie, go ahead. You said you were looking like you wanted to jump in on superdelegates.
Well, yeah, thanks. It sounds like, from what I understand, reading about the state conventions that have been happening, the state Democratic Party conventions that have been happening, Maine, Hawaii, several other states, I believe we're up to 5 or 6 states, have decided that they will require their superdelegates, should we still have them in 2020, they will require their superdelegates to vote with the will of the people.
Yeah.
So we're already seeing a very serious criticism within the Democratic Party against these superdelegates. And now a response, overwhelmingly, you know, convention after convention, is that, you know, you've got to follow the will of the people. So I think that that's an example of what I'm talking about, where the Democratic Party has this opportunity to re-energize and redefine itself a little bit away from, like, this corporate kind of, you know, rigged secret society superdelegate thing and become more a party of the people once again. So this is a great example. And if we can do that, I think that might energize and reassure a lot of Democrats like myself.
All right. I think that probably is enough said on superdelegates, because to Josh's point, they are not subverting the will of the voters in this particular election. The question is just why have them at all? And it sounds like they're not.
In some states, they are voting against the will of the people.
Well, I mean, you could look at New Hampshire, which was, you know, when Hillary Clinton ends up with 2/3 of the delegates coming out of New Hampshire, for example, you go, well, what's really going on here? But the point is, overall, in this election, they're not changing the outcome.
It's not like Bernie Sanders won the elected delegates and then the superdelegates gave it to him.
And he would not be the nominee if superdelegates didn't exist.
Well, and you would need, but you need the superdelegates to give the majority required to Hillary, because she hasn't hit the majority that she needs for the minimum for the nomination in pledged delegates.
And why are we allowing superdelegates to declare their allegiance to one candidate before the others have even announced or the race has even started? That's also undemocratic.
And why are 10% of the superdelegates not even elected official, but lobbyists and from corporations? That's not the Democratic Party.
Yeah, this is bad optics, Evan, right here. I mean, she's won. There's no doubt she's won, but this superdelegate thing just makes for an uncomfortable conversation.
And so it sounds like everybody agrees here. Get rid of them.
I personally, if I had to say it, I'd get rid of them.
Okay. Yeah. Let me get back to the phones. Kay in Rochester. Go ahead, Kay.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing that people just don't talk about, and this is really the first
time that I've heard them really say, well, Hillary's going to have to really court these Bernie supporters. That's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that. And, you know, the Green Party is going to put forward a candidate. The Libertarians are going to put forward a candidate. What is Hillary going to do to make sure that these candidates are going to vote for the Democratic Party? We really, a lot of us don't trust her. How are we going to expect her to take down the policies that have led to her winning this nomination in the first place?
Kay, thanks for the phone call, because I want to keep it moving. And Kay's phone call is the perfect time to jump in and say, I've got some sound from Jill Stein. Yesterday, she was on an internet program named Democracy Now!, and she was talking about exactly what Kay is talking about here. Now, Dr. Jill Stein was the Green Party candidate in 2012. She is running again, but they haven't made their official designation, their nomination. And interestingly enough, you're not going to hear that in this clip, but earlier in this interview with Democracy Now!, Jill Stein said that the Green Party has reached out to Bernie Sanders himself, going back 5 years, trying to find out, would you run as a Green? And she said he hasn't even returned their phone calls, which is interesting. But she also left the door open for the Green Party to say, hey, Bernie Sanders, run this year as a Green. It sounded like Jill Stein would be willing to step aside and say, I won't run. Let Bernie get the nomination. It just doesn't sound like Sanders has any interest in doing that right now. But I want to listen to what Jill Stein also said about where she thinks the state of the election is.
Right now we have an election where even the supporters of Hillary Clinton, the majority don't support Hillary, they just oppose Donald Trump. And the majority of Donald Trump supporters don't support him, they just oppose Hillary. And the majority are clamoring for another independent or several independent candidates and an independent party and feel that they are being terribly misserved and mistreated by the current politics. So to further silence our voices is exactly the wrong thing to do. And I'll just point out, Donald Trump himself is lifted up by a movement which is very much the product of the Clintons' policies. The lesser evil very much makes inevitable the greater evil, because people don't come out to vote for a politician that's throwing them under the bus.
All right, that's Jill Stein, Green Party presidential candidate. Let's start with Kevin Sweeney there. Could you vote for Jill Stein over Hillary Clinton?
I really hate to speculate at this point. I'd like, you know, a third-party candidacy has never been successful in the United States. But I look toward Germany, actually, when the Green Party there did come to power and really upset the status quo. Will people vote for Jill Stein as an alternative to Trump and Hillary? I think probably more so than ever has voted for the Green Party this year. I expect to see much more votes going that route. Could it be a successful candidacy for the presidency? I don't believe it could be.
Carrie, could you vote for Jill Stein instead of Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, at this point, I'm really pledged to Bernie Sanders. I intend to vote for him at the convention. I'm very excited to do so. In terms of who I vote for in November, I haven't decided, and I want to see what the election, what it looks like in November. What I will say is I think that Jill Stein is an incredibly brilliant woman, and I've been very, very impressed with the way she has come out against some of the tactics used by the Democratic Party. She's in a position where she can call out the establishment without really suffering too much of a negative blowback. And I really have a lot of respect for her. And I have to admit, I didn't really pay too much attention to the Green Party until this year. I've been a Democrat since I was 18, always, you know, voted Democrat. And I have to say, I'm just very impressed with her. I think she's an absolutely brilliant woman.
Here's what I think annoys some Democrats about what she's been doing. If you follow Jill Stein on Twitter, a lot of her Twitter account is essentially saying there's no real difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and we can do much better. And as much as Bernie Sanders' movement might not like Hillary Clinton, I don't understand the notion of there's no real difference. Do you really believe that, Carrie?
I think that both parties right now are sort of they're indebted to the corporatocracy, if you will. I mean, they're looking for funding from the corporations. They're both, you know, very much, I mean, there's a lot of answering to corporate interests and not as much answering to the people.
That's true. But one party would be doing one thing on same-sex marriage. One would do another. One party would be doing one thing on reproductive rights. One would be doing another. Those are not, you know, sort of nothing issues, right? And even though you've got what you call a corporatocracy, you still have parties that are going to be behaving very, very differently if they're elected in power.
On social issues, I agree with you. But some of the fundamental core issues, I think she's absolutely correct. The influence of those corporate and rich dollars on our legislation goes far beyond the public's control or the public's influence. So when Dr. Stein calls both candidates more alike, that's where I see the problem. And again, I will go back to it. Get the money out of politics, go to public funding for our elections. Then I feel very confident voting for candidates. But right now, when I don't know who's giving money to Secretary Clinton through the super PACs, I'm wary of who she's going to respond to if she is to win the White House.
If I could just push back against what Kevin said just a little bit, I think that when you go in the economic realm as well, you've got, you know, Donald Trump, if we're to believe what's on his website or to believe what his politics is, he wants to give an $11 trillion tax cut to the wealthy,
right,
whereas Secretary Clinton wants to increase taxes on the wealthy to pay for a large infrastructure and public works program. So, you know,
it's not just social issues.
It's not just social issues. It's every single issue. It's Donald Trump wants to see nuclear weapons in the hands of every government in the world, and that's just crazy.
Not every. I don't think Papua New Guinea gets nuclear weapons.
There's no reason not to, according to what Donald Trump says. But, you know, so it is more than that. But again, I would agree that there is room and an abundance of space right now for the Democrats to come out, I think, strongly in favor of getting money out of politics. I think it's a huge issue right now, as wealth has become more concentrated in fewer hands. Mm-hmm. You see the increased influence of that, and we see it, quite frankly, in every level of government. You see it in county government now. We've got corruption upon corruption when it comes to public dollars being funneled into people's pockets. You've got people going to jail. You've got some folks at the state level that are being looked at, and you've got a whole realm of folks in the federal space doing the same thing. So there's a lot of will, I think, in the electorate to make changes.
And if it doesn't happen this summer at the convention, I think Democrats and the Sanders movement will feel like they've been sold out and it will never happen.
And you've already heard Secretary Clinton start to make those overtures. In the speech that she gave in New York City, in Brooklyn, I think she made a point to talk a lot about having to get money out of politics. And I think that's the beginning of that conversation, because I think that her people are very smart. They understand that there's a lot of room there to be made for that kind of policy proposal.
Well, and you also see Senator Sanders' success at fundraising on an average donation of $27. That inspired people. That's the movement we're talking about. That didn't really happen during President Obama's early campaign. He wasn't raising all this money from individual donors, not at this level. He has twice the number of individual donors that President Obama had. And I think that is the key issue moving forward for the Democratic Party. Let's get away from the influence. Let's say we are truly going to represent the people. Let's bring labor back to the table. Let's fix what's broken.
All right, we have every phone line lit up, so let's keep going down the phone lines here. And next up, Steve in Penfield. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
The last caller actually had an excellent segue to my question. And while listening to some lefty radio, I heard a thought postulated that if the Republican candidate, if Trump implodes, or the Republicans, the establishment Republicans, are successful at running another candidate, and that ticket is split, would it be a good idea for Bernie Sanders to then get back into the race as an independent or continue his candidacy, thereby being able to draw more heavily from independents and even some Republicans? And the commentator I listened to thought that he would be crazy if he didn't do this. And in my mind, it's a real possibility that it could happen. And there's always the possibility that Hillary Clinton, some sort of scandal or some, you know, issue with the emails, whether it's true or not, and I don't believe there's anything there, but if it starts to really create a drag on her campaign and weakens her as a candidate, I think that could be a real possibility, and I'd like to hear what your guest has to say about that, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for the phone call. I would definitely agree with at least the assertion that this is the most unpredictable state of the race I've ever seen this close to a November election, because the Republican Party this week has been at least verbalizing this idea that, do we try to subvert the rules at our own convention? You saw Bill Kristol try to get David French into the race. That didn't happen, but they are still in a – they're talking about bringing back Mitt Romney or Ted Cruz. You're talking about very openly about other independent ideas. Meanwhile, when you put Gary Johnson in an actual poll, he gets 10 to 12%. If he gets 15%, he's in the debate as a Libertarian Party candidate. So anyway, the point being, I think what Steve is alighting on is this idea that that unpredictability might be ripe because the vote's already going to be split up in many ways for Sanders to stay in. Kevin?
You know what? I totally agree. If Trump were not the candidate, I would say that both Senator Sanders and Donald Trump ran a revolution, a political revolution against the status quo. And the voters, the Republican voters that Trump energized will certainly be looking to vote against the Republican Party should they push Trump out of office. And that would provide a great opportunity for Senator Sanders. Whether he would run or not would, I think, have a huge impact on could he win? Potentially under that circumstance, he could. But if he were to lose, he could potentially lose a lot of potential he would have in the Senate and power and the ability to make things work there as well.
And whereas, Kevin, if Trump stays in the race and Senator Sanders decided to run as an independent, I think a lot of Democrats would feel like he could put Donald Trump in the White House.
I think so, too.
Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay. Carrie?
Well, I think that in a typical year, potentially a third party run would be a threat to, you know, splitting the ticket or whatever. But, you know, this year's different. Bernie Sanders is different. I mean, he energizes millions and millions of people. At this point, we have 42% of our electorate is independent. And, you know, we do have numbers about the leading candidates. I mean, we've got two candidates who are the most unpopular candidates that have ever run, aside from David Duke, or, you know, we're really
George Wallace, in my
really name. really low favorability numbers, really high, you know, untrustworthy numbers. I mean, we're talking about some very, very unpopular candidates. And, you know, in that kind of dynamic, a third party or a fourth party run by Bernie Sanders, I think, could be really successful.
Josh Keaton.
I think there's a lot of incentive on the part of Senator Sanders not to do that. You know, he has a very, very prominent position in the Senate right now, and he would certainly put that at risk. He wouldn't keep it, I wouldn't think, if he were to run it as a third party. You know, and I think that, you know, Democrats and the American left is stronger when we are united. And I think that it's important for the Clinton supporters and Clinton's team and the Sanders supporters and Sanders teams to find a way to bridge the gaps they have and to work together. Because I think, you know, despite how rancorous and contentious, you know, primaries are, and they always are, you know, there's a lot more common ground between us than exists differences. Certainly 2008 is different than 2016. You know, you do have more of an outsider edge to Sanders run than now, but I don't think there's anything to be gained by him running as an independent. I think he understands that, and he knows that if we can bring everyone into the fold, and if we work hard, not just to win the presidency, but to win additional Congress members, members of Congress, and folks in the Senate, that's how real change happens. It doesn't happen when you have only one part of the government. You have to have legislative as well. And what we haven't mentioned yet at all is how there is an open Supreme Court seat right now. And that is really important. You know, Kevin, I know that when you and I have talked on the air and privately, you've always said that Citizens United and that case has been a impetus for a lot of you, for yourself and a lot of Sanders supporters to get involved. You know, that was a Supreme Court case. And we have a chance now to get a Democrat in the White House and a Democratic Senate to get more liberal justices on the Supreme Court. When liberal change happens, whether it's in this Congress or the next Congress or in 10 years from now, having a court that's going to be in a position to rule in our favor is just as important as winning the White House and winning the Senate.
Do you think, Josh, Donald Trump is the Republican Party candidate for president this year?
I do.
Nothing's going to change that?
No.
Okay. Back to the phones. Dan Livonia has been waiting. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes. I believe there was a reason that President Obama won. It wasn't just the African-American vote that put him in there. It was all the independents, I believe, that helped put him in. And to have to choose, it's not the first time, the lesser of two evils. And to me, they're both evil in different ways. You have Hillary's baggage, and then even more so now running again with while she was Secretary of State. I'm an independent, registered independent voter. And the reason I'm independent is because of just what they did. They anointed her to run. They did everything they could to try to sideline Bernie Sanders. And I'm having a hard time. I get the message. I want Congress to take some seats. I want the Senate to take some seats. But I'm, in my mind, I'm having a hard time this fall thinking that I'm going to vote for Hillary. I just don't trust her. She'll say whatever she needs to say.
Could you vote for Trump?
Pardon?
Could you vote for Trump?
No, I would not vote for Trump. No,
okay.
No. But I know not voting is like voting for him, but I just, I wish the Democratic Party would wake up and put people up that are honest. I would have. It's not a man versus woman thing. If I wished Elizabeth Warren was running, it's honesty. I'm looking for honesty. And when she ran against President Obama, it was honesty. I could not vote for her. I didn't trust her. And he was clean, young, and he's done a great job. I do not trust her though.
All right. Well,
that's my point. I wish the Democratic Party would wake up, and. In the future, whatever has to happen, I have a hard time thinking I'm going to vote for her in the fall, but I won't vote for Donald Trump.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. I want to get another perspective and try to get through as many calls as we can, because there's Dan, and I think probably a lot of Sanders supporters have that concern right now, that they don't feel any sense of trust. But Rich in Rochester with a bit of a different perspective. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, my perspective is this. First of all, the Green Party candidate made a statement that the majority of Hillary supporters don't trust her. There's no evidence of that. That's number one. Number two is this. The supporter of Sanders keeps talking about, well, he would make a viable third-party candidate. That flies in the face of all of the evidence that he's lost by almost 4 million votes to Hillary alone on the Democratic side. So with all this talk of his popularity, in the end, the numbers don't bear out. And also, there's no way that, you know, people talk about being independent. Independent does not mean independent in your position. Most independents are either progressive or conservative, but they're not independent in the sense that they don't think a certain way. So there's almost a misnomer in that designation to me.
Thanks for the phone call, Rich, and we're starting to hear more from more of a pro-Clinton crowd. An email from a listener named Dave who says that he was offended by the guests equating both political parties. He says, here's an example that should be illuminating. Ask your guests this question. Do you have a credit card? Well, if they do, that alone makes them a supporter of big banks on Wall Street, and that also makes them a part of the system they say is leading to the corporatocracy. Why don't they cut up those credit cards and live up to their belief to return to the status quo? Remember, this is we the people. We are in charge of this together, and together we can change it or not. That's from Dave. Fair or unfair? Kevin, I think Kevin and Carrie don't think that's fair.
Well, I have to laugh. I have a mortgage, so I guess I'm answering to the big banks. Look, we're in a situation where
I'm not hunting and gathering.
I work a 9-to-5 job. I earn my money. I'm paying one of my daughter's college loans, and I'll be paying another one soon enough. We are basically, most of us are enslaved to our debt. So we don't want to be in that position, but based upon the economic growth in this country and how all of the wealth that has been generated the last 30 years has flowed to the very top, that's what I'm working against. I'm looking to get back to where the tax code we had in the 70s and the 80s, close up the tax havens. So no, I don't think that's fair at all.
And so Kevin made his point, about a minute left, so 30 seconds to Carrie and Josh. Kevin said, money in politics is the big issue. The party will unite, for lack of a better term, around Clinton if what, Carrie?
Well, I know that the money in politics issue is the reason that brought me into being a Sanders supporter. This is absolutely the biggest problem that we have. I think Citizens United must be overturned. I haven't heard Secretary Clinton say that she will appoint a Supreme Court justice who will do that. Hopefully she does say that. But I think if we're talking about party unity, the Democrat. The established Democrats have a establishment Democrats have a lot of work to do to earn the trust and support of Bernie supporters.
All right, 20 seconds, Josh.
On Citizens United, I mean, it's standard for presidential candidates not to talk about specific cases when they talk about their what justices they would
litmus
put on the Supreme
test,
Court.
Et cetera,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you don't get into that usually, but I have no doubt that she finds it reviling. But I think she should make a big stand against money in politics, and I think that she will win over Sanders supporters by continuing to stand up for progressive values that she has for her entire career.
And you expect to see that, especially next month at the convention.
I personally suspect that Sanders and Clinton will appear on a stage together prior to Philadelphia.
We'll see. Josh Keaton with a Kevin Sweeney. Well, that was a very interesting reaction. We will see. Kevin Sweeney and Kerry Gilroy have supported Bernie Sanders, and I appreciate both of your perspective. Thanks for being
here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so
and
much.
And Josh Keaton, the Democratic activist who supported Hillary Clinton and expects that unity to start happening, that I know the president wants, that Hillary Clinton wants. We'll see. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
And for all the callers and listeners who took time to write in, a lot of interest in this. We shall see. It's going to be a very interesting 5 months, especially this summer. Short break, more connections next.